At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The hard battle over the national debt is pretty much the only game in town right now in Washington. It's hard to know what real horse trading is going on behind closed doors. But publicly, the players in the House, Senate, and White House seem far apart. Time's running out as the debt ceiling looms. The nation needs a deal, but what's a good deal here? This hour On Point, top voices, tough choices, and the home stretch of the budget battle. You can join the conversation. Have you ever seen a moment quite like this? What are you hoping for here? A deal? A clash? Do you fear a crash? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now is Republican Congressman Jim Jordan, who represents Ohio's 4th District, regarded as one of the most conservative Republicans in the U.S. Congress and a tough hardliner on American debt. He's chairman of the Republican Study Committee. He joins us from Urbana, Ohio. Congressman Jim Jordan, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you today, Tom.
And joining us from Columbia, South Carolina, is Democratic Congressman James Clyburn. He represents South Carolina's 6th District. He is the number 3 Democrat in the House and a member of the so-called Gang of Six, or Joe Biden's group, the once bipartisan group that was trying to hash out a deal. Those talks collapsed 2 weeks ago when GOP members of the group walked out. Congressman James Clyburn, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Jim Jordan, first to you, what do you see coming here? Are we going to crash into this August 2nd deadline without a deal? Does it matter if we do?
Well, I mean, look, the plan we're advocating, we as in conservatives, and both in the House and Senate, is one that we think is just good common sense. And if we do that plan, I think it's best for the country. And I think we avoid this, as you've described, this crash on August 2nd, or as Tim Geithner described this crash on August 2nd. So our plan is real simple. Cut spending, cap spending as a percentage of GDP, and for the first time in American history, let's actually pass a balanced budget amendment through the House and the Senate and send it out to the states for ratification. You do those kind of things, you actually put the country on a fiscal path that is sustainable, one that will make sure we have this great thing we call America in the future for our kids and our grandkids. And so that's what we're advocating. It's the only plan, frankly, out there, and it's the one that's getting momentum. More and more presidential candidates are endorsing it, and so we're excited about that.
You've been very clear in what you're looking for. Very large cuts, a constitutional amendment, a balanced budget amendment, something we've never had in this country before. And the Democrats have been very cold in response to that. If you can't get the votes together, where does this end? Is it a deal has to be made, or you're willing to kind of risk the Geithner scenario, I guess?
Tom, think about this. This is Republicans need to say the same thing, in my judgment, about the balanced budget amendment we're currently saying about taxes. I mean, it's been very clear Republicans have said we are not going to support a debt ceiling increase. We're not going to support increasing the borrowing authority of this country if, in fact, there are tax increases in the deal. We should also say we are not going to support a debt ceiling increase unless we do the common sense thing, the thing that 90-some percent of Americans are for, have a balanced budget requirement for the federal government. I think it's interesting. Every family, every business owner, every local government, every state government has a balanced budget. The only entity that doesn't have a balanced budget requirement is the entity that's built up a $14 trillion debt. So it makes all the sense in the world to say, sure, we're willing to work with the other side and come up with a deal that makes sense. But it should include common sense things like a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution.
Of course, there's a big argument out there that governments, federal government, like the U.S. government, needs the ability to use debt to help the economy. On the other hand, as you say, $14 trillion in debt is pretty ugly. James Clyburn, where do you see this going, Congressman, at this point? Do you see a deal in the works or a crack-up?
Well, I certainly hope there's a deal in the works. The fact of the matter is, we need to find a bipartisan solution to this. This whole notion that it's my way or the highway is just a bit sophomoric for anybody representing a country as diverse as this. This whole thing about what the Republicans do and the Republicans don't want and the Republicans will not do, that's not what made this country what it is today. We have Democrats, we have Republicans, we have independents. We ought to sit down like adults and work this out. It's been done time and time again before. Now, this notion about all of the candidates, more and more candidates, adopting this plan that's been put out there, the fact of the matter is we have but one president in the United States, and he has not adopted the plan. So to have candidates adopting the plan is fine. But we have got to really get serious about protecting everybody's interests as we move forward. And I have always had a real problem with people who take the attitude that I know what's best and nobody else got any real thought worth considering.
What happened in that Joe Biden group, Congressman, that you were right there in the midst of that bipartisan effort? It broke down 2 weeks ago. What did it crack on?
It did not break down 2 weeks ago. On the day of the last meeting or next to the last, and I say that because it was on a Thursday,
okay, and
we were scheduled to meet the last time on Thursday, and if need be, meet again on Friday. So either the last day or the next to the last, Eric Cantor decided to walk away from the table. We had had 10 meetings, and that was to be the 11th meeting, and that's when they walked away. Now, nothing was not a breakdown. We had gotten to the point of about 85% completion. And the question is, do you consider closing tax loopholes for people who get all kinds of tax breaks for sending jobs overseas? If you're going to stop depreciation for CEO corporate jets that's now got 7 years depreciation,
mm-hmm, bring
that to make it the same thing as people have at Delta, U.S. Air, all other commercial airlines. They only get 5 years depreciation. But if you're a corporate jet owner, you get 7 years with depreciation. That's the kind of stuff this stuff broke down over, and the American people need to know that. Now, the New York Times on yesterday published three things in entitlements that we had supposed to be new. It's not new.
You're talking about Medicare, Medicaid, and looking at tightening up and cutting on those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those things were discussed thoroughly in the Biden committee and were, I might say, tentatively agreed to.
But what do you say to Jim Jordan's complaint that if we do the same old, same old and lift the debt ceiling, you know, let it go higher, we just go further into debt, $14 trillion is enough? What about that essential argument?
Well, we are in debt because what we've done in this country and never had done before, number one, we are fighting three wars on credit cards. Number two, we give this big prescription drug plan out here and put it on the credit card. We give this big tax cut to wealthy people and put it on the credit card. We have never fought wars in this country on credit cards before. That's what put this country in debt. And this $14 trillion in debt, if you were to have paid for all of these things, we would not be in debt. And that's a fact. And for them to put out an act as if we did not make these crazy decisions, and I did not vote for this Iraq war, but it passed. That's what the Republicans wanted, and they got it.
Let me take
and
it to
Jim. Put it on the credit card. That's what they wanted, and they got it.
Let me take it to Democrats Jim Jordan, Congressman Jordan. What about it? It's Republican debt, war on the credit card, and tax cuts for the rich. As we went deeper into red, what about that argument?
To Congressman, to his point, look, here's what bipartisanship has gotten us. It's gotten us a $14 trillion debt. I'm not here to say Republicans aren't somewhat responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to say Democrats. But both parties are. Democrats gave us a stimulus package that didn't do the first thing, frankly, to help our economy get out of this recession we're in. Didn't do the first thing to create the jobs that it was promised to do. So spending occurred on both sides. That's why we have to do this. This isn't this cut cap and balance plan. This isn't Jim Jordan's plan. This is the common sense American people's plan. So it's not my way or the highway, as the congressman said. It's let's do what the American people know needs to be done. Let's do what they have to do, in their budget, cut spending, cap spending, do a balanced budget reform. That is so common sense. Why the Democrats would not be for that, I mean, astounds me. Because it is common sense, and as I said before, every local government, every state government, every family, every small business owner has to abide by those
rules. Well, there may be reasons.
Why in the world can't the federal government?
But let me ask you, I know that you're a wrestler coming up, a champion, national champion wrestler. There in Ohio, Wisconsin, Madison in college. What do you feel going on in this big wrestling match over this right now? You're not lining up a whole lot of Republican support for this cut, cap, and balance pledge, at least the latest I read here.
Well,
do you fold at some point? Do you take it right to the end? How's this play out?
No, I think you stand on principle like you're supposed to, like the American people elected us to do. Over 100 members of the Congress signed a letter saying we think cut, cap, and balance is the right approach. You've got several members of the Senate signing on to the plan, and you've got almost every single conservative organization around the country saying this makes sense, we should support it. You can't get conservative organizations to agree on much of anything, but they're all agreeing that this is the right approach using the leverage of this debt ceiling to say, let's put in place those things that make sense fiscally. I always equate it to if a business was in trouble, they couldn't just go to the bank and say, hey, loan me more money. We're gonna make a few tweaks around the edges, and we're going to kick the can down the road and loan us some more money. The bank would say, forget it.
Will it crash the economy if you can't
do these? Yeah, will it crash these important things? Then the bank will say, okay, that makes sense. We will help you. We will help you in the short term by loaning you more money.
Will it crash the economy if you can't get a majority, if you can't get an agreement on this and go?
I will tell you what will crash the economy. Virtually a consensus now amongst economists saying if we don't put in place some bold new things, those things that make sense fiscally, if we don't do that, within 2 to 3 years, we will have a debt crisis comparable to what's going on in Greece right now. David Walker met with a group of us conservatives just a few weeks ago and said 2 to 3 years. There's virtually a consensus now, and you can't get economists to agree on much of anything, but they're saying it's going to happen.
There's the Grand Canyon. Yep,
there's the time value of money.
There's the Grand Canyon of disagreements right there on a very, very big issue. Congressman Jim Jordan joining us today from Urbana, Ohio. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
You bet, Tom. Thank you.
And Congressman James Clyburn joining us from Columbia, South Carolina. Good to have you again, Congressman. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the debt ceiling debate, deal or no deal, and what it means. The clock is ticking down. The stakes are as big as they get. You just heard Democratic Congressman James Clyburn there and Republican hardliner on the debt and deficit, Jim Jordan of Ohio. Let's listen to just a little bit of the president. Last week at his press conference on Wednesday, the president chided and infuriated Republicans, comparing them to school children, maybe some of his own. But in their case, he says, avoiding the homework.
Malia and Sasha generally finish their homework a day ahead of time. Malia's 13, Sasha's 10. It is impressive. They don't wait until the night before. They're not pulling all-nighters. They're 13 and 10. You know, Congress can do the same thing. If you know you've got to do something, just do it.
Laughter in the press conference, not around Washington. Republicans were steaming about that. Here's Republican Senator John Cornyn from Texas this weekend on Fox News Sunday saying the White House might wait till the 11th hour to put forward a proposal of its own in an effort to force the Republicans' hand.
What I'm concerned about is the president, by not seriously putting a proposal forward, but rather just criticizing those who have, we're running up against this deadline, and they're going to try to present it as a fait accompli. Nobody's going to have time to read it or consider the implications of it, and he's going to say you have to pass it or the economy's going down the tubes. That's just irresponsible.
Gail Chadwick joins us right now from Washington, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, thank you very much for being with us. What is going on here? Is there any place where these tracks meet, or are we headed for some kind of meltdown, crack up? I don't know what comes, Gail.
Tom, you heard it on your show this morning. The chasm could not be greater between Jim Jordan, the Republican, and James Clyburn, the Democrat. This isn't just partisan. It is deeply ideological at that point, and that's what makes it so difficult. And I think the other thing that really concerns me is it's not clear that the leaders have a capacity to hold this together. The differences in Republican ranks are enormous. It is not clear that Speaker Boehner has the power to force them all to sign on the dotted line. And in the end, He needs a majority in the House. It's not clear he can accept and push through a fait accompli.
So give us some of the byplay here. I mean, you heard there, just as you say, wide, wide apart positions. Jim Jordan with a kind of maximalist on cutting and capping, with a constitutional amendment. He wants that at least to go through in the Congress before August 2nd. Of course, that would be a long process after that. But, I mean, we're talking a couple of trillion maybe in cuts, and then that cap on top, no new taxes. That's one side. On the other is, what? You tell us. What are the Democrats willing to put on the table now? And has anybody got a majority to get some agreement here?
No, they don't. And this is really at the bottom line, the Republican demand is this. We want the president to put something on the table. They are furious that they have, for weeks, months now, taken heavy hits for putting a budget on the table that actually cut the deficit, the Ryan plan. And, you know, seniors are being riled about the impact of Medicare, but Republicans are saying, look, you know, anything that's going to credibly solve this debt problem is going to hurt somebody. We want you to tell the Americans what you would do. Remember, the president's budget plan came to the Senate. It did not get a single vote, not a Democrat, not a Republican. It did nothing on the debt question, and that's where Republicans, you know, they say that the president has been missing in action. His line to them is, you're not behaving like adults. Those arguments rile both sides, and it's really not clear what the middle looks like at this point.
But aren't there signals coming from the White House? I mean, there seems like a general notion of maybe not $2 trillion, but $1 trillion in cuts, something like that. But then also to hit the deficit by raising revenues, by closing loopholes, Republicans call it tax increases, for another, what, $400 billion or something? Is that coming? Is that the general music coming from the White House direction?
That is what the White House is saying, and I actually think the tax loophole argument has a lot of possibilities. The problem there is time. You had, you know, the Republicans have, most of them have signed a no tax increase pledge by the Americans for Tax Reform, and it has two elements. One, don't don't raise rates. And two, if you cut a single tax loophole, you have to compensate for it by a tax cut elsewhere. It must net out to zero. Well, if Republicans followed that, you couldn't possibly use a tax loophole for debt reduction because it has to net to zero. But you had an interesting vote in the Senate a couple weeks ago where most senators signed on to a plan to cut an especially egregious tax loophole for ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
If that continues, if you could pull together a list of tax loopholes that everyone agrees actually harm the economy, I think it's plausible you could use that for debt reduction, but it would be a reach for Republicans because of this pledge.
It seemed over the weekend as though John Cornyn, this Texas Republican senator, was on Fox News Sunday, and it seemed like he was trying to hold something open there, maybe on the closing loophole side. The Fox host was Shannon Bream. And here you can hear Shannon going at the senator, having some trouble getting him to clearly say why closing tax loopholes doesn't amount to raising taxes. Let's listen. Maybe he's trying to keep some air open here.
All right, so just to be clear, talking about closing some of those tax loopholes, making changes to the tax code, you don't consider that raising taxes?
Well, it's not raising rates. I don't mean to be cute about the language, but what I think we ought to do is bring the rates down to make it revenue neutral. So as you eliminate these tax expenditures, if you bring the top rates down, that's revenue neutral. That's not raising taxes.
That's not raising taxes. Maybe there's some room for compromise there. We're talking about the debt ceiling debate, the sort of deal or no deal moment in this month and what it means. Gail, if I may, let me bring in a couple of big voices here with different perspectives on what's going on. Paul Begala joins us right now from Virginia, Democratic political consultant, political commentator on CNN, was an advisor to President Bill Clinton, chief strategist for the 1992 Clinton-Gore campaign. Paul Begala, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Tom. Good to be here.
Mark McKinnon joins us from Blue River, Colorado, Republican political strategist, president of Maverick Media, worked as a media advisor to former President George W. Bush and the 08 campaign of Senator John McCain, a co-founder of No Labels. It's a nonprofit looking with slogan is not left, not right, but forward. Mark McKinnon, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Good to be on. Thanks, Tom.
So do you see something emerging here where the two sides are going to find an agreement, or are we going to just smack into this August 2nd? What we're told is a deadline.
Well, I tell you, one of the problems, first of all, is, you know, I think the American people look at Washington and hear what the Congress folks are saying, and they just can't believe it. And part of the problem is there are 28 days left until the deadline, and the House has scheduled more time off than they're actually going to be in session. They're only going to be in session 12 days. And the administration has said we probably have less time. They say that a deal needs to be reached by July 22nd in order to draft the bill's language and pass it through Congress. So we only have 17 days left, and the House is barely working. And so that's part of the problem. But from No Labels' perspective, we say everybody should be at the table. Everything should be on the table, and we should be working around the clock to fix this, just like hardworking Americans are. They're working around the clock. They're working weekends. They're working two jobs in a difficult economy. So Congress should be doing the same thing. And you know, from a Republican perspective, I think that this idea that tax loopholes or tax increases is ridiculous. We should be cutting the tax loopholes. I like that idea. That's a way to raise revenue. And I think on the Democratic side, they've got to give on Medicare. We passed that. When we passed that, expected life expectancy was about 65 or mm-hmm. something. Now it's 15 years more than when it was passed, and we've only raised the eligibility by 1 year. So those are a couple of things we need to do.
You can say that tax loopholes are not tax increases, but Grover Norquist doesn't look at it that way. There's big voices going the other direction. We just heard from Congressman Jim Jordan. He's got a kind of maximalist position here. You know, not only big cuts right now, but a constitutional amendment to require a balanced budget. You know, he looks at where this thing stands and says, this is leverage we've got to use. We want to use this August 2nd. Why should we be talking? Here's our position. It's that or good luck to you. What about that?
Well, it's an opportunity to make some big changes, and we ought to be doing it. We shouldn't be kicking it down the road, which is what I think is going to happen, unfortunately. There'll be some small deal to just get through this. But we've got to embrace the big things. I like the idea of a balanced budget amendment. I just think we ought to put revenue on the table to do it.
Paul Begala, where's the heart of the Democratic side on this? I can't really tell at this point. There is talk about big cuts here, also about closing these loopholes. Republicans call it tax hikes. But is there a bottom line that you can see?
Well, the bottom line is you have, I think, what defense planners would call asymmetrical warfare. I listened to Mr. Jordan and Mr. Clyburn.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jordan stakes out a very principled position, but a very inflexible position. We have to cut. We must only cut. Very different, say, from Mr. McKinnon, who says, well, of course, we need to close some loopholes, right? But Mr. Clyburn didn't take out a maximalist position for his party. He said, look, we got to make these cuts. I don't like it, but we have to. And from all the reporting, the Democrats have put as much as $1 trillion of cuts
yep.
on the table. There's others talking about $2 or $3 trillion in cuts. I would add that the Democrats already cut Medicare by $500 billion, the reward for which was some incredibly demagogic ads that Karl Rove ran around the country attacking Democrats for cutting Medicare. So I don't think that this is, and part of the problem in the commentariat, now that I'm a commentator, is that the default position is always even, Stephen. Well, a pox on both their houses. Democrats don't want to cut spending. Republicans don't want to raise taxes. It's just not true here. Democrats are apparently willing to make spending cuts, some of them very deep and painful, in constituencies they care about, like disabled children and the elderly. And Republicans, a few, seem to be maybe open to a couple of loopholes when obviously we just need more revenue. We need more revenue, and we need to cut spending. It's a very simple deal. I worked for President Clinton. I helped him balance the budget. That's how you do it. You spend less and you tax more.
Yeah, Mark McKinnon, Jim Jordan, Congressman Jordan's attitude, he said very clearly there is, okay, you know, this go along, get along. Big cuts, but not enough, he says. It's time to be radical because we have a radical problem. And go along, get along, he says, has got us $14 trillion in the hole. Now, you heard James Clyburn say, well, that's a war on credit card and all the rest. But what about Americans who look at this and say, well, you know, it has just gone up and up and up. Maybe this is the time to put the brakes on.
I think that's the case, and I think the American public looks at what's happening in Congress, and they think we've got this deadline coming up, and they can't understand why we can't embrace the cuts that we're talking about. They can't understand why Republicans won't budge on more revenue, even if it's through just cutting tax loopholes. I think from a Republican Party perspective, we're getting dangerously into a position where we appear to be intransigent, and I think that can hurt us down the line. So I agree with Paul on that count. I think we need to make more changes in Medicare, but I think the Republicans have got to get off this inflexible position. I think we've gotten a lot already. I think the Democrats have given in on a lot of cuts, and we've got about 3-to-1 cuts per revenue right now. So I think that's a pretty good trade-off.
But you're with No Labels. You're saying not left, not right, forward. Within the party itself, does your view have any amplitude at this point, or is it singing in the wind?
I wish it had more, because I think that the sort of Tea Party caucus of the Republican Party has got the biggest microphone right now, but I think that that's a very short-term strategy that's going to have long-term consequences for the Republican Party.
Mark McKinnon, Paul McGalla, Gail Chadwick, please stand by. Let's bring our listeners in. Stephen, Newport, Vermont. Thanks for calling, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the discussion.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess my frustration when I listen to this entire conversation isn't with any of your people on air. It's the whole problem with partisanship. For me, partisanship means part solutions. There are people that want, I only want this, and I won't accept that. And the others say, I only want that, and I won't accept this. And at this point, I don't think it's a question of compromise at all. I think we need both solutions. I think we need to cut government spending. There's way too much government, way too many wasteful programs. But we also need to increase revenue. And if we're only trying to say who's going to win how many points on this side or that side, I think we will be in the Greek situation in a couple of years.
Stephen, no thanks to the partisanship. We'll look at that. Of course, that's the way our political system is put together. But wow, what an impasse right here. Ben in Nashville. Ben, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I guess I hear a lot of, it seems like, really simplistic solutions to this complex issue. You know, you got people that say, we just want to cut spending and no new taxes. And, you know, that just doesn't seem like it's going to cut it. I mean, we're at a war in Afghanistan trying to build a nation where nobody has any national identity. You know, if we just looked at stopping the vulnerabilities from that region to our nation and stop trying to do all this nation building, we'd have a ton of extra revenue right there. And I guess my other main point that I want to bring up is, you know, if we stop all of our national spending and we don't invest in infrastructure or education, you know, how are we ever going to turn our economy around? Companies don't want to, you know, be in a country without a reliable infrastructure or educated workers. I think that when you look at the situation with China and India, you know, their national employment rate, as far as the rate of income of their people, it's going to rise. And if we're not ready to take advantage of that when our labor costs go down, then I don't know how we're ever going to turn our country around.
So have enough of an investment going on to be ready to compete in the world. On the other hand, they don't have $14 trillion in debt in those countries, and we do, and there's the rub. One more here, Mike in Toronto. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on.
Tom, it's always a pleasure listening to your show.
Thank you. What do you think?
I'm calling because we are sitting outside the United States, which we are told, I have been told in school, you are the greatest country in the world.
okay, the Canadian has a laugh, but what do you see right now, Mike?
That's a good
one. We want
to
be. We want to be.
We're horrified by this comic nonsense that's going on down there. We're watching you guys, who are supposed to be world leaders. You know, you're dickering and bickering, and it just looks like a comedy of errors.
But what do you want? Do you want the United States to look like Greece or Portugal, you know, in debt up to its ears? And
you guys are playing a really, really a risky game here. I don't know if the politicians are aware just how much utter chaos they can cause by this, you know, seeming indecision or inability to work together or cooperate. Outside of the United States, we're looking at you guys and saying, holy mackerel, can't they, you know, get their act together?
Hey, Mike, I appreciate your call. My time is short before the break. Thanks very much from Toronto in Canada there, Mark McKinnon. What about the risk here? Is it as big as that? You know, Mike looks across the border, says, holy cow, you're risking a whole lot here, utter chaos maybe. Do you think the stakes are really that big or not, Mark?
I do think that they're that big, and, you know, I think all we have to do is look at Greece to see what the consequences are going to be. And, you know, it is a leadership issue. The leadership has got to step forward. And by the way, I'll remind your listeners that it was Senator Obama on March 20th, 2006, who voted against raising the debt ceiling limit back in 2006. And what he said was interesting. He said, the fact that we are here today to debate raising America's debt limit is a sign of leadership failure. So if it was a leadership failure then, it must be a leadership failure now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about the debt ceiling debate, deal or no deal, and what it means. The clock is ticking down. August 2nd, we're told, end of the U.S. ability to what? Come up with its full faith and obligation of the U.S. government, scratch cash for all its obligations here in the United States and right around the world. The stakes are about as big as they can get, and that leverage is being very actively used in Washington. But who's got the most leverage? Where does this come down in the end? Mark McKinnon is with us, Republican political strategist, president of Maverick Media, and co-founder of No Labels. Paul Begala, Democratic political consultant, is here, political commentator on CNN. And Gail Shattuck of the Christian Science Monitor. Democrats are saying, we want some more revenue on the table in order to deal with this deficit. And we don't need to raise taxes. They like to say to get it, we can just close loopholes. Republicans say that is raising taxes. A couple of weeks ago, Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor walked out of the Biden group, the vice president's bipartisan budget group, after a disagreement on exactly that point. Here was House Speaker John Boehner back then explaining why tax increases are a Republican red line.
First of all, raising taxes is going to destroy jobs. And if you raise taxes on the people that we need to grow our economy and to hire new workers, guess what? They're not going to do it if they have to pay higher taxes to the federal government. Second, a tax hike cannot pass the U.S. House of Representatives. It's not just a bad idea. It doesn't have the votes, and it can't happen. And third, the American people don't want us to raise taxes.
They just don't want it. Paul Begala, what about this issue? Closing loopholes, raising revenue. John Boehner says that's raising taxes. He's not the only one who says that. And it's the wrong time in the economic ditch we're in to be raising taxes of any kind. What do you say, Paul?
Well, I would say he's wrong on two out of the 3 points. Raising taxes does not per se destroy jobs. Ronald Reagan passed the largest tax increase in American history in 1982, and the economy boomed. Bill Clinton passed the second largest tax increase in American history in 1993, and the economy boomed. George W. Bush, by the way, passed the largest tax cut in American history, and we had the slowest rate of growth in a half century afterwards. So the notion that there's this direct causal link, nobody wants 100% rates, obviously, but no serious economist. I mean, go look, your readers, listeners can look online at Bruce Bartlett, who was a Reagan economist, who makes this argument online on his website very cogently. And a third point, the second point, the tax hike can't pass the House. The Speaker knows his House better than I do, and I defer to him. That may be true. But the notion that the American people don't want it is just not true either. They want the more privilege to pay their fair share. They think it's outrageous that a janitor at GE pays a higher rate of taxes than GE pays on $14 billion of profit. It's nuts that a woman working at an Exxon gas station is paying taxes and not getting welfare when Exxon itself is getting welfare in these huge tax subsidies that we give to oil companies. So the American people do want it, actually. They want large corporations and rich people to pay their fair share. And of course, they do want cuts as well, and it's that sort of balanced approach that we need. But the problem is we're dealing with a Republican Party right now that's fundamentally unbalanced. Ronald Reagan could not survive in this party today because he passed 10 tax increases in his 8 years in government as president.
Let's get a call from Mandy in Omaha, Nebraska. Mandy, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I'm just absolutely infuriated by this entire debate. You know, and my thought is that I would never presume to know the answer to what is obviously a very complicated problem. But my feeling is that our elected officials have an obligation to do their job. I'm not the person who can figure out what is going to fix the budget crisis, but they were elected on the premise that they would do the job that they're hired to do, whether it's compromise, make budget cuts, cut taxes. You know, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that they're not doing their job. And one of your guests was saying that they've scheduled lots of time off. And, you know, my husband's an officer in the Navy, and we almost didn't get paid. And he goes to do his job every single day, just like I do.
Mandy, let me ask you, though. You're there in Nebraska. And, you know, Senator Majority Leader, Democrat Harry Reid, presumably he's looking at the Senate, trying to line up enough votes to have these loophole-closing revenue increases. And I'm reading reporting here that says your own Democratic Senator, Ben Nelson, may be afraid to vote for that because, you know, Nebraska leans Republican and he could end up being in trouble at the polls. So, I mean, he is a politician. He's looking at what, you know, how the vote might go in your state. Is this really about the congressmen and senators or the voters?
Well, it's an excellent point, and I would say Nebraska isn't necessarily my state, but it's a state we happen to be living in right now because we're active duty military. And if I were forced, I would say I identify myself as a Democrat, but I think you make an excellent point. And what all this comes down to is that really everyone is making decisions based on what is best for them. The elected officials are making decisions based on what they think their constituents want. The American people are giving feedback based on what's best for their own budget and their own lifestyle. And, you know, maybe I'm biased because my husband is in the service and, you know, we are a service-oriented family, but I think it's probably time for all of us to stop trying to think about what's best for us and think about what's best for the country.
Mandy,
and, you know, maybe that's completely unrealistic. You know, I know politics is a tough game and it's all about compromise and the gray area. But, you know, that hasn't worked so far.
Yeah, I appreciate your call so much, Mandy. Gail Chadwick, of course, if Jim Jordan were still with us, I'm sure he'd say what I want is best for the country. We've got to make big, drastic cuts here and cap this thing off. How do you read the political leverage in this? I mean, this goes down to a very, very sharp wire. You've got callers coming in here from outside the country saying, you know, please don't crack up, get something together here. But if you know, look at the who's going to blink dynamic here, Gail. What does the leverage look like as this gets right down to the wire on this question at the end?
Well, as in any deal, if you're dealing with someone who really looks like they are willing to go over the edge, they have an advantage. Republicans, many of them look like they are willing to go over the edge. They say that the country's fiscal situation is so dire that a default is preferable to watching the steady accumulation of debt and not forcing the government to change course. And the thing that really concerns me right now, I often talk to people, members of Congress, about who they listen to outside of Congress, who they respect. Remember back when President Bush II had his tax cuts, there was a big discussion about whether the country could afford it. And at the last minute, Alan Greenspan, Federal Reserve chief, came in and testified before Congress, and he said, you know, we could do this. And both sides said, oh, Alan Greenspan said we could do it. Done. Mm. There isn't anyone like that now. You know, we used to listen to chiefs of Wall Street. Anyone from Goldman Sachs that came in had a lot of moral authority because finance was so successful. Well, it isn't now. I have found no single person that a Republican and a Democrat would tell me they respect.
The Treasury Secretary, when he says, you know, you're playing with fire here, this could really blow up, that doesn't cut it?
Doesn't cut it. Because they think that some Republicans think that the alternative is even worse. And what is also striking about this time, this is not a deal that's being worked out behind closed doors. Members, especially these freshman House members, are spending a ton of time at home. They're home every third week. And so all of that kind of socialization that's supposed to go on, where they learn, well, yes, that was the election, but now you've got to learn how Congress functions and how we compromise, that's not really happening. So it is, you know, it is a matter of calendar, too. It was interesting you have Mark McKinnon on with mm-hmm. No Labels. They had a huge impact last week in getting the Senate to come back.
To stick around.
Mm-hmm. To stick around. They had some protests last week that I think had an impact. And as a result, instead of only having 9 days that the House and Senate are in session together, we have something more like 13. But whether that'll do any good, we'll see. It seems to me these sides are very far apart and they're listening to no one.
It doesn't sound like very many days, given the yawning scale of the gap here. Lowell, Massachusetts, Robert's calling. Robert, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm tired of hearing these the Republican congressman use this folksy analogy that they compare a federal budget to a House budget. It's just not the same thing.
Every family does it. Every state does it. The federal government should do it to balance it.
It's just not the same thing. A dad can't go to his boss and say, I need a raise. But the government can go and raise taxes.
So you just...
He can, you know, dad can just... He cannot buy a new sports tank that year.
right,
or invest speculatively in the Middle East.
No, I, no, I totally get it. And you know, there's the argument that governments need to be ready to open the spigots when the economy requires it. Though you heard Jim Jordan say, "Well, look, that hasn't worked with the stimulus." Of course, many economists say without it, we would have been in deeper trouble. But what about Robert? What about the $14 trillion number that's sitting there? I take your point. And nevertheless, $14 trillion in national debt, even for an economy the size of ours, and headed bigger if the trajectory doesn't change, what do we do about that?
We have to make cuts somewhere, but you don't stop feeding your children.
Got it. Robert, I appreciate your call. And Doreen in Lisbon, Connecticut. You're on, Doreen.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment on the they're not wanting to take away the tax breaks for big businesses and such. And my question is, what have they been doing with all that tax break money? Where are the jobs? I mean, you know, they just haven't shown any return.
Yeah, where's the payoff? Well, of course, it goes, a lot of it goes into dividends, and people have lived handsomely on those dividends. But maybe you don't hold those stocks, Doreen. Paul Begala, the president talked a lot last week about, you know, depreciation rates or timetables for private jets, but that's not going to balance this budget. I mean, we're talking small potatoes there in the big picture of things, Paul.
Absolutely. It's not very much money at all. The corporate jet loophole that the president talked about, for example, only saves you over a 10-year period, only about $3 billion, which is why it's so extraordinary that even that very, very low-hanging fruit, it's more than symbolic, but it's not enough to really get you very far down the road. Even that, Republicans won't agree to. And it is really quite impressive in a way. It's scary if you're worried about default. I mean, I do think we're coming right up into the wall of default. It could have catastrophic results for the country. Here's the problem, though. It could have very beneficial results for the Republicans.
Why?
Because if the worse things get for the country, the better things get for the Republicans. And I, most of them love their country. All of them love their country. But there is a little Machiavellian motivation, I think, on the part of a few in the Republican Party saying, well, if it crashes, we'll blame Obama. He's the president, and he will take the blame. He'll take the political consequences if we have another double-dip recession. And you do wonder if some of this intransigence, clearly some of it is this almost theological aversion to taxes. I get that. But I wonder if some of it is just, hey, you know, the worse things get for the country, the better things get for us.
Mark McKinnon, how far does that calculus go? I mean, there's still a while before the next election. Could that turn around and bite Republicans? They have not mobbed on to this cut, cap, and balance pledge that Jim Jordan has signed up for. Yes, some have, but many, many, many have not. Are they Republicans looking over their shoulders, too, with the elections in mind?
Well, I disagree with Paul on this point, and that is I think that there are very real and pragmatic consequences for the country if we go past this deadline, but I think there are political consequences for the Republicans as well. And I take a historical reference when Newt Gingrich was in charge and we shut the government down when Paul was working with President Clinton, and that had huge political consequences for the Republican Party. But I appreciate what Gail said about our no labels. We're getting the Senate back to work, and I hope we can get the House back to work as well. We polled this question, and not surprising, 8 in 10 Americans agree that Congress should not recess until they've taken concrete steps to improve the fiscal crisis. So our message is no deal, no break.
And there's no break, but do you see a deal coming somewhere here? Do you really see it?
Well, the other thing about a deal that I think is important when we talk about jobs is the real thing for a lot of businesses, there's a lot of cash out there right now, but they're just sitting on it because there's so much unpredictability in the market. Part of the psychological upside of a deal is that it will give business more confidence and predictability about what's happening in the future, and that in itself will help create jobs.
Gail, what about the notion of a micro deal or a mini deal that would not solve the big problem but would, you know, make just enough cuts to, raise the debt ceiling just a little and put off the big or something bigger until later? Is that coming at us?
Tom, that's how I sleep at night. The last thing I think of before I go to sleep is micro deal. I think that is a real possibility, especially on the Senate side. You've had Republicans say all sorts of things about I think John Kyle said a couple weeks ago, these tax cuts could be, you know, doesn't have to be in a 10-year time frame. It could be even longer, these spending cuts, rather. So there are points of flexibility here. The most promising one, I do think, is the tax loopholes combined with somewhere lowering rates. If you did that, I think you give a pass to some Republicans. So you use part of the loopholes to cut the deficit. You use the other part to lower a rate somewhere. And you spread the spending cuts out over a longer time frame. I do think something like that is possible.
Paul, what do you think? How does this end, at least end in this this big chapter headed toward August 2nd?
You know, I'm very worried, and I'm very pessimistic. And I'm worried that for some Republicans, the template is when President Bush passed the TARP bailout for the big banks. The country didn't want it. Just like if you pull it, the country doesn't want to raise a debt ceiling. We have to do it anyway. And remember the first time that the TARP bailout came up, the Congress turned it down. The House of Representatives voted against it. And the Dow dropped 777 points in a day.
Yep.
And everybody on Capitol Hill panicked, and they quick passed it and gave it to Secretary Paulson to go do whatever he was going to do. I think this is very different. This is not just a one-day equities market problem. This is, for the first time in 213 years, the United States of America no longer honoring its debt. And I'm told by people who do know these things, and I've been meeting with some of the people who were, you know, helped direct the American economic policy under President Clinton. And their view is, if people begin to lose confidence, it's not a one-day drop in the Dow of even 700 points. It's a multi-year problem of people no longer having confidence in our country. I mean, I was really struck in what Mike was saying from Toronto. I think a lot of sensible people around the world have always looked to America as a safe haven. That's why we have the reserve currency of the world. That's why our debt is preferred around the world. It's the most sound sovereign debt in the world. So I'm really worried that some Republicans are playing sort of a short-term game that, well, we can let it fail once, and then when the markets tank, we can then pass it and our constituents will forgive us. I think that the economic damage for that is far, far greater.
Well, I guess for today, that's going to be the last word, but this is not over. We're going to hear a lot about it in this month. There we set out the pieces. Paul Begala, we're grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
And Mark McKinnon with Maverick Media and No Labels joining us today from Blue River, Colorado. Mark, thank you so much for being here.
Kick it hard and carry on regardless, Tom.
Gail Shattuck, thanks as always. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
And listeners, it's great to be with you. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.